Accession number 31446, Mr. Dennis Vision, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about your time in Barkingside, and you became a fire watcher. Now, when did you do that? Who with? How was it organised?
I was working for Lamb's Garage, and they had a tower as part of the garage complex. They used to keep pool oil tankers there for emergency, for transporting fuel to various places if required. So we used to go up the top of the tower, two of us, and I mean, the chap I used to do it with was 18 years old. He got called up just after, and I was 14. But I used to get half a crown a night for doing fire watching.
So what was it like during a night's duty?
It could get very boring. But generally it wasn't a lot to do, because then you didn't have television, you couldn't put a television on, and you didn't have portable radios. So it was just a case of sit there, drink tea, and hope that nothing dropped on you.
And what would happen during an actual raid? What would you do?
We'd stand by with stirrup pumps, sand buckets, and anything like that to put the fires out if the incendiary bombs came down.
Had you been trained in that? Or
not really. No, it was just a quick thing, you know.
And did you ever have to do it, or were you lucky?
No, we were lucky. At one time there, you could get anything, like, because you used to be able to go up to a cafe up the road to get your, and you could always get a sandwich. So rationing didn't apply for going into a cafe. But that was it. You know, it's my wages for starting work at the garage was 25 shillings, so which was pretty reasonable for a 14-year-old. I mean,
what would you spend it on, or would you give most of it to your parents?
I'd give Mum a pound, and I had five bob. And I bought myself an old bike, so for getting to work, because it was a bit of an awkward journey for the bus, and I think I paid 10 shillings for that, which is 50p these days. And but other than that, it was, you know, I enjoyed it.
Now, any other things you remember happening during the war? So you're working as a mechanic,
yeah.
You're living in Barkingside. Anything happen? You know,
living in Barkingside, well, I stayed at the garage for a year, and then I left.
Yeah, so you left in 44.
Yeah.
And why did you leave? I thought you liked it.
Yeah, I did like it, but I got the chance to earn some more money, and that was on the building. What they, because while the bombs were dropping, you were chasing all round, as I say, putting tarpaulins on roofs, covering up windows, doing a lot of general work, and you'd be, let's say, if I was working on this house, we'd get a call. You wanted in Ilford, because if a bomb's dropped there, you've got to go and... So you all load up on the lorry, and away you went.
So you were working the building trade, yeah. Repairing damage.
Yeah. They used to call it cost plus. I don't know what that meant, but it was cost plus.
And what do you remember? Tell us about the sort of job you got. What do you remember of that?
Oh, I've got some horrible jobs on them. It's, you know, I mean... Especially the hardest bit was when you had no towers on the roof and you got to sheet it up and things. So you had to be pretty adept at nipping around roofs. I'm not very good now, but at that time, as a youngster, fear didn't come into it. You just run along the ridge and got the sheet and pulled it and tied sandbags on the end to hold them in place, and that was it.
So it was all just quick fixes.
Yeah. And then just after the war had just finished.
Now, do you remember VE Day at all? Or VJ?
Oh, yeah.
Or any celebrations at the end of the war?
Yeah, we had a party, I think.
Which one?
for VE Day.
Tell us, because these parties, they don't do them now.
Well, the whole street turned out, the mums all sorted out bits and pieces. But I don't think I got involved too much, because being at work, I didn't. You know, it was more for the kids than, when I say kids, I mean, I wasn't all that old, but it's...
So the adults didn't join in drinking and in the evening sort of thing?
Yeah.
They did?
Yeah. But the other than that, that was...
But you don't remember it that well.
I don't remember much about that.
Before that, do you remember the V1 or V2 raids? I should have asked
about that. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Tell us about that, then.
Well, on the building, we used to have one... used to designate one chap to sit up on the top of the roof and look for doodlebugs.
V1.
And it's... I mean, the V2, you didn't know, it just went bang. So if someone saw something, was it? But the main thing was, while the engine was running, it was all right. It was when the engine cut out, you knew then it was going to start diving. And that's when it was going to hit something. So all the time you could hear the engine, and they had a horrible sounding motor in them. So you knew what they were. And that was it. And just over the back here, we had an aerodrome, a Fairlop, where they had Spitfires and things like that.
Was there much damage done by V1s and V2s locally, or...?
There was in Ilford, and yeah, Ilford generally, and Barkingside, Clay Hall. Quite a bit of damage.
What about V2? Because they're so big, aren't they? I mean,
yeah, V2s I can't remember a lot of.
So it's V1s you remember?
Yeah. There wasn't much to remember about V2s, because all you heard was a bang and that was it.
Now, so what happened next? After VE Day, you carried on working up. I mean, still damaged, Rupert.
Yeah. But then people started coming out of services, and jobs become a little bit difficult. And
so building in the building trade.
Yeah. So what happened was, I think it was, might have been because we were only youngsters, they said, sorry, don't want you, we want the older bloke. And so it finished up that my brother-in-law, who he wasn't my brother-in-law at the time, and myself, we both found ourselves out of work.
When would that be? How quickly?
I was 17, just turned. And so we went round a couple of builders, and they didn't want, so we decided to, just like that, to go and volunteer, join up. Didn't mention nothing to mum, dad, nothing. We just went. And we went to...
Now, who were you going to volunteer for?
Didn't know, just till we got there. And then we went to Mare Street, Hackney. It was the place, what's that? And went in there. He said, what? So I said, Navy. And my brother-in-law said Navy. So they give us a...
Why? No reason.
No reason. And then we had to have a medical. And my brother-in-law had fallen off of a roof and damaged his back. And he was in plaster casts from his neck to his hips for quite a long while. But he was okay then, you know, when we went. And one of the things you had to do for the medical was bend over and touch your toes. Well, all he could do was just about nod his head. So they said, well, we don't want you, but we'll have you. So I got clobbered, and he went home. But later on, he did do his national service in the army. So but he's died now, because he emigrated to Canada with his sister.
So was there any exams, or there's a physical test, a medical, anything else before you joined?
No, I can't think of anything. I wasn't caught in, nothing like that. I didn't start caught in until after I came out of the Navy.
So you volunteered in March 47, it says here, and you started in May 47.
That's my time started, yeah.
Now, Where did you... So, tell me where you were reported to in May 47. That's to...
Mare Street, Hackney. I had to go to for my medical.
Do you remember your medical?
Not a lot. It wasn't a very good one. you know, doctor, I've had better medicals for applying for a job than I had for that.
Now, so you when you join up in May, you go to St. George. Now, what's St. George?
St. George was a barracks in Gosport, Hampshire.
It's a shore station, isn't it?
Shore station.
What we're interested in is when you first arrive, you're a sort of civilian, aren't you? You're a bit really. You've not been in the services at all. Not been in the Army Cadets or anything.
No, I was in the Naval Cadets for a little while, but was it.
Tell us about that first. What training did you have with them?
Hardly any. It was out the march and salute, basically. You did hear a little bit about, they used to tell you about navigation, which, I mean, we were never going to do anyway. So it's...
So when did you been in them?
That was World of War was on. I went into that.
What year?
I must have been about 15, I suppose.
So 1944.
15, 16, something like that.
And, I mean, where had you gone for that? I mean, where did you report to?
Ilford High Street. I can't remember the name of the place now, but...
But you hadn't done much with them?
No.
Okay. Now, when you arrive at St. George Barracks, what's your sort of reception like? You know, you return in as a civilian. What are they like to you?
Very good. I mean, they want to hold on to you because you've still got an option of walking out. But, no, they're very good. I can't remember. There's quite a few of us, about 30 of us, I think. And we all went in this one big room, dormitory, and got our lockers, and then they...
Now, can you describe the room, you know, your barrack room? Is it a barrack or is it a hut?
No, it's a big room like this with all beds coming up.
But do you see what I mean? Is it a hut, just a Nissen hut or something, is it a proper barrack?
No, at St. George, it was a brick-built place.
So how are they laid out? Can you picture?
If this was the room, you'd have the beds... double bunks coming out off, you know, a gap in between.
Off the wall, either side.
Yeah. And that was it. Yeah. And then you had a wash place at the end, and very basic.
Now, what about kitting out? Do you remember being kitted out with it? Because it's all changed now.
They gave you a blue suit, number threes, a white suit, jersey, white fronts, socks, shoes. No, not shoes, boots. Boots they gave you. And obviously the collar and the hat and everything else. Your name, your cap tally with your ship's name on. And then the comical bit was, when we got it, how many couldn't put on the uniform? Because there's so many bits and pieces, tapes, and on a naval uniform. I don't know what it's like now, but in those days, you put your jersey or your white with a little blue strip on the front. It's just like a T-shirt. But then you put your collar on, which you had one piece go down your back, two bits over your shoulders to the front, and then you've got these tapes that you have to bring round from the back, through some loops, tie it all up, and then you put your jumper on, which has got a false blue collar. And the collar, by the way, is the bit with the three stripes on it. And so then when you put your jumper on, you then pull the collar out so it's on the top. Then you've got your black
lanyard.
The black scarf.
I know it. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Round, which is also tied up with tapes at the front of your jumper. Then you have to put a lanyard on, a white lanyard, which goes under the collar. It's got a Turk's head knot, sliding knot, which slips up, and then it goes down, tucks around the bow where it's holding your black scarf or I can't remember what you called it. And then originally it was you either put your passer's dirk or Dawson's pipe on the end of it, so you didn't lose.
Now that does sound complicated,
but the comical bit was when we first got them, I knew how to put it on because I'd been in the secret. But you had others who were putting on the jumper and then trying to put the collar on. So they got all the bits outside the uniform that's supposed to be underneath. And all the tapes dangling, you know. It was hilarious for the first day or so.
Did you have to label everything? Or sew it? I'm not...
No. Most of it was stamped paint. They would give you a name thing. And you dipped it in this paint, and or black or white, whatever the case may be, and you stamped all your gear. The only thing you had to do was your jersey. You had to do embroider in chain stitch your name on that. Now, with the Navy, all they did then was they issued you one uniform, or one kit. After that, you got by it. I think it was something like, we used to get something like 2 and 11 pence a week kit upkeep allowance. So if I wanted a new suit, new uniform, I've got to pay for it. So this is where the naval tailors used to make a bomb out of us, like, you know, because they're the people you had to go to.
But you wouldn't do that while you were at St. You'd do that later, would you?
We didn't do that when we were
just
joined up, because we didn't know enough about it then. Because then you didn't, as we used the term, didn't have your tiddly suit then and your big flare, your big bell bottoms. I mean, you might get a pair of 24s or 28, they weren't big enough. You'd go out into the tailors and you'd want 32s, and some people even had bigger.
Now, what about haircuts, things like that?
Haircuts?
Did you have to have one,
No, I don't think I did. I think we all had haircuts, but I mean, no one was. It's not like the army where it's over. We just got a trim and that was it.
Now, you'd gone there. I should have said this before. We looked in your papers. You'd volunteered. You went there in May 47, and you were there till the end of June 47. Yeah. So about 6-7 weeks. Now, what we'd look at is a typical day's training to get an idea of what, because this is your basic training, isn't it? How would your day start?
It'd start with PT. You put on a pair of shorts.
Tell me about PT generally.
It's just the arm stretch, your legs astride, jump up and down, and deep breathing, and a little bit of running on the spot. And generally, that was it for us for a PT. But mainly, it was marching. Marching and rifle drill.
When would you fit breakfast in then?
After PT.
Now, what generally was the food like? Can you look at, because
I don't know if it's where we were brought up. I mean, we always ate well, but we didn't have anything elaborate. So, I mean, I've never really been fussy with food. If I like it, I eat it. And another thing is, if you give me something on a plate, I'll eat it. I don't leave anything. I don't know if that was from being little and didn't know what I was going to get for me next meal, but you just eat whatever's put in front of you.
So the food was all right by yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Was there enough of it for a grown-up?
Oh, plenty of it. But the best thing was later on the ship when you went canting, messing. But I'll come to that later.
Now, after breakfast, then you have, say, drill sessions. Now, how did you take to drill?
Drill, I enjoyed it.
Now, what did? So tell me about drill. I mean, how you liked it? Why? What do you like about it?
I don't know. It just made you feel good. Always enjoyed drill.
Did you have any problems at the start?
No. We had one chap. He's only a little fella, but he used to swing his arm forward with his leg, and he just couldn't do it the right way. And I'll always remember it, the PO, the drill PO, he used to get hold of him and hold his hand and march him up and down, swinging it for him, like, you know. And he got it in the end, like, you know.
And you just enjoyed the...
Yeah.
Did you understand what it was for at the time, or were you not...
Discipline. I mean, it's like... If someone tells you to march up there and you come to the door, you kept marching. You knocked the bloody door down. You know, until someone tells you to stop. That's my idea of discipline, is you're being told to do something, you do it. And it's, you know, this is why I can't understand people these days, is none of it about.
Now, what else might you do? So we talked about bit PT, drill. What else?
No, look, go to the canteen of the night.
You probably did some seamanship training.
Oh yeah.
Tell us about that.
Knots, tying knots. Quite good at knots.
How far did you go with it in basic training? Because there's a long way you can go with knots and splices.
All your general knots, your reef. Clovitches, running hitch, bowling. Bowling, for a lot of people, was one that they couldn't get.
Why?
I don't know, because you had to twist the rope and go through. I mean, to do it, as we used to term it, the Boy Scouts way, was you make the loop in the rope first, then push the end of the rope through that loop, round the back through the loop, and pull it tight. But to do it Navy way, you didn't. You got the end of the rope, laid it across, and then you twisted it. So when you twist, the rope is already through the loop. So then you just pull it round, and the other one was a double bowling, so that if you're being pulled up and down, you sort of sit in one and got the other one round you. But you got
What about splicing? Because that's different.
Splicing. We didn't get that in that, but I did do splicing.
So you didn't do splicing in your basic training?
No, I picked up myself on board ship.
What else? So there's knots. What other seamanship training? You do boxing the compass?
You had to learn a compass. But I've never really...
So it wasn't all this nor east, nor north. Yeah. Did you have to go back?
You had to do all that, yeah. We never really used it. I can't ever remember using it.
What else in seamanship?
Rowing. I had to do some rowing.
Was that cutters you were rowing?
Yeah.
Now, what was that like? Cutters
or whalers. No problem.
Could you row already? Or
no, I've never been on a boat in my life. My holidays used to be going to Kent for op picking. That was...
So how do you take... Because it can rip your hands up, you know... not rip, but, you know...
It can make you sore. I mean, it's your back, what's it? Because you haven't got sliding seats. You're just sitting on a thwart, and that's it.
Did you take to it? I mean, did you enjoy it all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did... A regatta in Malta.
Later on, yep. Yeah. So rowing. What else? What about sailing?
Sailing? No, I don't mean
that. Just rowing. Yeah. Anything else is seamanship.
Seamanship.
You had a seamanship manual, I presume.
Oh yeah, but the, you had. When I went in, they gave you a very thin one. There is a big one, but they also give you a thin one. But I mean, the seamanship manual was telling you how to lay your kit out for kit inspection and how to roll it up, and so the name, your name is showing, and how to tie it. And
let's look at preparing for a kit inspection, because that's some... I mean, in as much detail, how did you get your uniform in the state they wanted and your room and the rest of it?
Well, you just washed it, pressed it, folded it correctly, and then for kit inspection, basically you rolled it. And you just saw it, but you had to make sure your name was at the top so it could be seen, and you had a certain way. you laid your hammock out first.
On your bunk?
Yeah. And then everything went on your hammock. That went out flat. Because you, with your hammock, you've got one hammock, canvas hammock. You've got a mattress, which was about inch thick. God knows what was in it, but it wasn't very. And one blanket. You didn't get sheets and pillows and one blanket, and that was it. That was your, plus what we termed as clues, which are the strings that fit to the hammock and what's it, and for putting it up. And but so you had to lay that out and then put all your kit on in a certain way around it. Your boots had to be standing up so the soles were showing and things like that. But it's
and how about, say, polishing your boots? How did you get them to?
Well, they never really bothered too much about boots.
So they wasn't spit and polish it. I mean,
not to that extent. I mean, because you didn't go galloping around ship in a pair of boots. You either had shoes or what's it? I mean, you always cleaned them, obviously, but you didn't have to. It wasn't guards type thing.
And even in basic training, they weren't.
No.
What about that? Anything else that they were particularly into? But what about the room? Getting the room ready for inspection?
Oh, you have to keep that tidy, obviously.
Just tidy, though.
Clean everything else. If you left anything laying around, it was picked up and put in the scram bag, and that was just thrown in a locker somewhere. So if you left a hat on the side and gone out, someone would get that. The mess deck dodger, the bloke who, because you always had one man who cleans up your mess all the time, and you know, you just take it in turns. But he'd chuck it in the scram bag. Now, if you wanted to get your hat back, you had to give in an inch of pus of soap to get your hat back, because pus of soap is a bar about 6 inches long, inch and a half square. And that's and you use that basically for dobing, for washing. And
now, don't go aboard ship yet. You still remember? So that's prepared. Now, what are the sessions of? Did you have education classes there, or
no?
Or
no, not at all.
Any gunnery or specialist training, or is it?
You do that after.
Now, how did you get on with the other lads? Were they the same sort of background as yourself, or were they?
Well, we had. I remember one chap came from the Isle of Wight. He'd come off a farm. Another one, you know, one had been in the army.
They were all volunteers.
Yeah.
And so.
Because the conscription didn't come until afterwards.
No bullying then. How about the instructors? What did you think of them? How did you get on with them?
Oh, they were all right. Yeah, but obviously strict. Might give you a few lessons in how to swear, but other than that, they were all
did
right.
You mind swearing? Or I mean, you've been working building.
Coming from the East End, everyone was swearing. You know, that was normal conversation East End in those days. So it's. It didn't bother me one bit. Mind, we couldn't use it.
Do you think they were fair, the instructors?
Yeah.
So if they picked on you, it was because you'd done something wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Did they know the stuff? I mean, did they actually know what all the one page ahead?
No messing about. They knew what they were on. I mean, most of them were three badge men. So that meant they'd been at least 12 year or more. So it's so they certainly knew. Badges, by the way, and stripes. I used to tell everyone I was a Lance Corporal, but it's not that at all. I had one good conduct badge, actually, they call it. You get the first one for 3 years, the second for nine, and the third for 12. So